Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the NYBS Radio Show, home of the New York Bigfoot Society.
What's up, Footer Nation? Gary Hooten Holly here, and welcome to another episode of Bigfoot Radio right here in the great state of New York. I'm bringing in my boy Kenny. Kenny, what's up, man?
Hey, Gary.
How you doing?
Hey, fantastic. Happy to be back on.
I know, it's been a hot minute here, and for everybody to know, this is a Season 3 debut. We've come into three seasons of NYBS Radio, which is awesome. I honestly, looking back on it, I never thought we would last this long. I really didn't. I started this show because people kept asking me, Gary, when are you doing a show? You know, you've been doing this for a long time. You should have a show. And I'm just like, I'm not into that stuff, really. I'd rather be in the woods. But gave it a shot. Here we are. You came aboard for the second season. And look at where we are now. We're cruising right along.
That's actually how we came about, you and me working together, was the first season. I came across it,
yeah.
And listened to it, and so we started talking, and I came out to one of your lectures, and then we kind of took it and ran from there.
Yeah, it was definitely a good time, you know, doing the lectures. I'm so glad I met you, and watching your success lately and everything that's going on awesome with you. I mean, it's awesome. I really enjoy it. You know, good things happen to good people, and definitely in this field of Bigfoot study, any kind of cryptid, even paranormal study, whenever you see good things happen to good people, you know, it's amazing, you know, because, you know, as we know, this is a, you know, dog-eat-dog world, if you want to say, especially in this field, which you and I totally stay out of. But in the same sense, this is good. So, you know, I'm just really proud of you, man.
Thanks. I mean, it's all a team effort. I mean, like I said before, you know, my success is the team's success. So, you know, just going out there and again, you know, just surrounding ourselves with good people that, you know, get it and, you know, care about us. And, you know, we don't, you know, we're not trying to be experts at anything. We're just trying to enjoy what we do. And, again, just surround ourselves with people that, you know, want to be part of what we're doing, and you know, and again, positive people that want to be a part of what we're doing.
Exactly, you know what I mean. And for all of our guests, you know, give us a little bit of background of us. My name is Gary. They call me Hooten Holla. All right. You know, I've been seen on National Geographic Channel, Discovery Channel, Destination America, international TV. I've done multiple shows on Bigfoot, cryptozoology, and things like that. So I've kind of been around. I've met a lot of the big leagues in the Bigfoot field. I've been very blessed to work with them one-on-one also. So that's a lot of my background. A lot of my knowledge comes from, you know, what I've learned from them. Also, I'm a bush, you know, bushwhacker. I do bushcrafting and things like that, a mountaineer. So the woods is my second home. Kenny, you want to give a quick introduction of you?
Yeah. Again, my name's Kenny W. Irish, and I'm an author. I by no means will ever call myself an investigator or a researcher. I don't think I deserve that title. You know, that's definitely for the people that, I mean, I'm boots on the ground, but not anywhere near like Gary. And, I kind of more, in a sense, kind of call myself an explorer because I kind of explore things more than I actually go in and really do a lot of research. I kind of like to go into different areas and just, you know, just kind of check out the areas and see what's going on. And, you know, and again, you know, being an author, is always fun. That opens up a lot of opportunities for us, you know, as a team to be able to, do different interviews and, you know, it helps out with different connections. So, I've been with the NYBS for about a year and 3 months now. And, just learning a lot from Gary. You know, he's been around for a long time doing it. So, you know, I'm picking up a lot of, you know, what he's putting down.
Yeah, working together is how we get this, you know what I mean? And Kenny and I come from different backgrounds, but Kenny teaches me a lot. He keeps me in check. The one thing that we always agree on is that it's okay to disagree. You know, we'll disagree on certain subjects, and it's totally cool. And you need team members that you disagree with. That's what keeps you real. All right. And so, you know what I mean? It's fine because in this world, people can't just get along and learn to disagree. You know, Kenny and I, we're cool guys. We've laid back and you know what? It's cool if we don't agree, but we have a mutual respect for each other. I respect him. He respects me. And that's how it works. And that's the way it should be. And that's how you get the right answers. All right. That's the only way you get better. The only way you get better is by different ideas and things. And, you know, we've kind of got that knack right now. All right. So, Kenny, let's get right into it. So let's hear a little bit about what your book has been doing and things like that. Talk about your book a little bit.
All right. So June 6th, Folklore Frankenstein's, my second book with Dark Moon Press Publishing released. And it's been doing well. I've been getting a lot of positive feedback from it across the country. There's some select locations that are starting to carry it. There are some local bookstores that are going to be carrying it where I'm at. I mean, brick and mortar, you know, a lot of people pretty much just go on Amazon. But you know, where I'm from, I've got select stores that are actually going to be carrying it. Some in Vermont, some in New York, possibly some in Massachusetts. It's going to be actually sold at the North American Bigfoot Center. That's owned by Cliff Brockman from Finding Bigfoot. That just got solidified, and the book's actually arrived there today. I was communicating back and forth with Cliff earlier today, and so I'm pretty excited about that. Just enjoying writing. Even though Folklore Frankenstein just came out about a little over a month ago, I'm actually diving into Folklore Frankenstein 2, International Lore. So I'm working on chapter one right now, which is going to be similar to this book, but similar concept, but very different at the same time. So I'm pretty excited about that. And just different radio shows coming up, different filmings coming up. So it's, you know, there's a lot going on, and we're definitely staying busy, and and I'm trying to do my part too, and read some other authors' books. So recently I started reading, let's see, get it up there right, a book for my friend Daniel Benoit. He just released this about 2 months ago, so I'm actually just starting to dive into that. So it's a wildlife and Bigfoot field guide from different things that he's learned throughout the years. So I'm excited to look into that, and I'm also starting to read by Ron Moorhead, The Quantum Bigfoot. So I'm definitely excited about diving into these books, and if you guys get the opportunity to read them, definitely, you know, go for it. I love it that you guys support me and purchase my publications, and I just want to, you know, show and, you know, other authors, and definitely support them as well. They're out there making it happen.
Yeah, and it's awesome. It's funny that you brought up, you know, Ron Moorhead and the quantum Bigfoot. It's, you know what I mean? We talk, he has a whole different take on the Bigfoot and the phenomenon in general, which is definitely interesting. And it's funny, I was watching a thing on Loch Ness actually last night, and they were talking about the similarities between Loch Ness over in Scotland and Lake Champlain. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this, and maybe you have because you do the cryptid studies, but they find that both Loch Ness and Lake Champlain are full of quartz. All right. Now, when we look at quartz, quartz is known to be able to hold energy. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And what's up, Crystal? Hi again. And what they're saying is that one of the theories, and this is by a physicist that came up, because we talk about wormholes now, and we talk about, you know, being able to do time travel and all these kind of things. One of the theories is that because there's so much quartz in both Loch Ness and in Lake Champlain, and they're both on tectonic plates, which means that, you know, there were, you know, as the earth shifts and things like that, there's actually chasms in both lakes. So there's one chasm in Lake Champlain, according to what I was watching, that there's a 500-foot crack. And because it's a crack in a water base, and if there is a lot of quartz down there also, it's very close together. So it's only like not even so many feet apart. They're saying it's possible that during any kind of electromagnetic field, like a storm, or if the plates start shifting, it creates that energy in the quartz itself that when it releases, it's able to then create a wormhole. And they're saying that the wormhole, then you're able to see prehistoric creatures like a plesiosaur come out through these things. And these people that are taking the pictures are catching that exact moment, almost like when we do ghost photography. You know, when I had my paranormal encounter actually last year and saw the British soldier at Saratoga Battlefield, like clear as day, that is almost like a vortex in-dimensional thing happening. And I know what I saw. I've been doing this stuff for 24 years, all right? So I'm wondering if it almost is possible that maybe Loch Ness and Champlain, since they have similar makeups of, you know, geological terms and ecology, that this may be a possibility. And it's something I would never even thought of in 1,000 years.
It's interesting. I've never heard anything like that. I mean, you know, all the research I've done and study on like Lake Champlain, and I mean, it used to be connected to the Atlantic Ocean, and it was actually called the Champlain Sea. And theory is, you know, obviously because, you know, it was all covered with glaciers and yeah. It melted and then became its own entity that it had, you know, trapped per se, you know, a different type of prehistoric type of sea creature. That's definitely one theory. And another one is because it was originally connected to the Atlantic Ocean, that there's actually still connected tunnels that actually go out to the ocean. You know, it's still a freshwater lake, but somehow, you know, again, there's theories that it's still somehow connected to the Atlantic Ocean. Again, I've never heard the theory about the quartz or anything like that. But I mean, it's, you know, who knows? I mean, every time I think I'm right, I find out I'm wrong. So.
Yeah, and it's funny because I never heard of it till just last night, and I'm like watching, like, wow. And then you just brought up the Ron Moorhead, you know, with the, you know, quantum Bigfoot, and that's almost like what his whole idea is,
right?
About
Bigfoot
coming from another dimensional thing, and that's why I brought that up, because it kind of triggered that and been like, listen, I just watched a thing on Loch Ness last night before I went to bed, and this is exactly what they were talking about. It's kind of like, you know, with quartz, and I, you know, who knows? I mean, because, you know, it's just an interesting theory. I mean, we all don't know all the theories, and it's definitely interesting. And they were talking about the underground tunnel that goes straight across and all this crazy stuff, you know what I mean, which I mean, I don't know if I buy that one. But, you know, I'm kind of still on what you said with the glacier thing, how they just got stuck in there, and as times receded, you know, land came up around it, blah, blah, blah. But who even knows? Because, like I say, we deal with the paranormal also on the other side, and we've seen some weird stuff that I can't even explain. So, yeah, I don't know. This is super interesting.
At the same time, I mean, you know, it's a huge lake, and I mean, its deepest point is over 400 feet. So, I mean, at any point in time, I mean, you know, something that's living in the lake, I mean, you know, could definitely without a doubt height. I mean, a lot of the time when they talk about sea creatures and especially champ, you know, people are talking, you know, 50 to 100 feet long, which it really it isn't the truth. You know, most sightings, you know, are really anywhere between like 15 to 25 feet long. So,
yeah.
You know, a lot of the time when we're thinking, you know, horned sea creatures, you know, or horse, you know, sea creatures, you know, again, you know, we see this huge, long, you know, mass of, you know, 100 feet long. But, you know, from what I've understood, it's nothing like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they think a lot of times it's a sturgeon, not so much, you know, a lake monster, because it's about the same size as a sturgeon as you get those measurements. So, but yeah, I mean, it's always Loch Ness lake monsters are always an interesting subject, and we can have, you know, I know you're very good friends with a researcher, so we can definitely get her on when she's able to. But let's get back to Bigfoot here. Yeah, Western New York Bigfoot. When you come into the paranormal field with Bigfoot itself, you know, Kenny and myself are very open to it. That's not our take on it. As far as I don't think, Kenny, you haven't changed on that, right, in the past couple of weeks? It's not a paranormal thing? Okay.
No.
So I just want to make sure. So, you know, we're on the flesh and blood side. I can know myself and Kenny, we stay on the Native American side of it. All right. We go by the Native Americans. They are the experts. If anybody's an expert, they are the experts. We're not the experts on this stuff. So, but it is super interesting. Kenny, you want to talk about, like, the last time we went out, the lights that we were seeing in the woods?
Oh, the light you said?
Yeah, you know how the random lights that we were talking about, and then you're going to do a whole thing about it?
Yeah. So, you know, we were out in you know, in the research area, and, you know, we're very much about, you know, the Native American lore and where they came from. And that's where a lot of, you know, the understanding that we have of Sasquatch or Bigfoot, what have you nowadays, came from. So when we were out there, Gary brought out his laptop and some speakers, and we actually played some Native American chanting music, drumming. First off, I mean, everybody should do that anyways. They should go out in the middle of the woods and do that when it's dark out. It's just cool as heck. Second of all, you know, when we ended up leaving, we ended up seeing this light in the distance, and you know, this is a light that, you know, shouldn't be there. There's no actual reason for it to be there. Obviously, you know, there's different gases, different things. This is nothing like that. There's no way this had anything to do with that. There's no campers in that area. I mean, there's nothing that should have been over there that should have been illuminating a light. And, you know, I don't know if that has something to do with the fact that we played you know, the Native American chanting and drumming, because, you know, Native Americans always talked about the Sasquatches, you know, being of flesh and blood and spirit. So, you know, that's why I, you know, I'm still on the flesh and blood side, but yet I can't 100% be like, it's 100%, because Native Americans said flesh and blood and spirit. So it kind of makes me wonder, you know, was, you know, from the chanting and that music that of drumming, you know, did that actually possibly stir up something and create that light and was watching us? Could it have been, you know, a Native American spirit? I have no clue. You know, theories, but I had no problem saying I don't know what it was, but it was incredible just to be able to see it and know that there's nothing out there that could actually make that happen at that point in time. If it was somebody with a flashlight walking down the trail, it would have eventually left that area, but it stayed right where it was. And, you know, it sometimes it would kind of disappear, but then it would reappear in the same area. So, again, you know, there could be a reasonable explanation for it, something that's just, you know, have something to do with the woods there that has nothing to do with anything that we did. But at the same time, I mean, it was a very cool experience. And, you know, a lot of what we do has to do with personal experiences, and that's what kind of keeps us doing what we're doing.
Yeah, and like I say, the lights in the woods is always a weird phenomenon. I mean, I've seen them being in the woods at nighttime so many times, and it's funny. I believe I'm in the woods more at nighttime, even when I'm hiking and doing all the crazy mountaineering stuff, more at nighttime than I am during the day because I'm not a morning person. I am just not a morning person. So, and you see all these weird lights every once in a while, and you can't explain it, but you know what you're seeing. Did you walk? Yeah, Crystal, when we saw that light, we were in our area. We were right smack in what we call Primitive Research Area Number 1, all right? We have a bush camp in the woods way off the beaten path, so humans aren't down there. And if there was humans down there, we would see human traffic. Right now, since hunting season and things aren't going around, there's no one down in this area. Also, we have trail cameras up. We would know who's in there and who's not. So, yeah, it was right smack in our research area. We started playing the Native American music. I had this idea to be like, hey, why not? Like, we go so much on the Native American side of what we do. Let's start playing some drumming. Let's start playing some, you know, real Iroquois songs. And I picked Iroquois because, once again, that was one of the main tribes in New York, along with the Algonquins. And, sure enough, we're just playing this music, and you know, we don't really always expect to get a response in return. That's the main thing. A lot of people are like, oh, well, no. A lot of times we get nothing. We get absolutely nothing. And like Kenny said, nothing. And we're okay to tell you that we get nothing. I mean, we don't get a footprint every single time. Yes, there are times we go out multiple times in a row, and stuff happens. And this year it's kind of been like that, which is kind of it's interesting, but. But overall, what color was it? Kenny, what was it, like a white color, right? It was like a white ball?
Yeah, it was definitely white. And it was one of those things where, again, you know, it kind of like, you know, dissipated, kind of disappeared, but then came right back in the same area. So, again, I mean, if it was somebody walking through the woods with a flashlight, I mean, eventually, you know, we would have caught on to that. But this was just – it was just there, and it was as if it was, like, watching us. So I don't know. It was really neat, you know, and, you know, wasn't a lightning bug. It wasn't anything like that. And anybody who knows us knows right off the bat that if it's something – if we can say, yes, this is what it is, we would prefer to say that. But this is one thing, again, we just definitely couldn't explain it. It was just this Adirondack light is what I like to call it. It was just, it was a really, really, really neat experience.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely cool. Mike, good luck on your, Bigfoot research. All right. Thanks for joining us. Western New York Bigfoot Society asked, you know, do we know anything about what's going on in the Moose River Wilds lately? All right. If anybody doesn't know, the Moose River area of New York, it's so wild. It's one of the most wild areas of New York that's left. It's like when you're into the Cedar River flow and area and paddling and all the hiking trails and mountain biking out there, it's so remote. And you can go tens and twenties and hundreds of miles, actually, into this area. What I can tell you is I do have a report coming out of there, and it's actually from a personal friend who has a camp up there, and they believe that they have had them around their camp area. They've been hearing whistles. They've heard tree knocks in the woods, things like that. But no sighting reports as far as sightings. But as far as, like, weird squash behavior, yeah, I mean, if you do remember, I think it was two seasons ago on the radio show that we had a police officer on that was riding his motorcycle, his off-road motorcycle, up in the Moose Valley Plains area. And sure enough, he had what he believes is a Bigfoot encounter at one of the campsites, the Primitive sites. And then the forest rangers did come out, and they kind of kicked him out of that area when the DEC came along. So, you know, once again, it's super wild over there. I mean, if there is going to be Bigfoot around, or that's where they're going to be. I mean, it's so remote and wild up there. Abundance of food. Now, we're talking about abundance of food. This is kind of the issue that we're having this year. We're going to get a little bit of education on you about the bear activity. If you're in the woods, be very careful of bear activity, okay? Bears are out now. They're hungry. They are super hungry. We're in drought right now, for people that don't know. So food isn't as abundant as it normally is, all right? We do seem to be having, at least down in the Albany area down this way, the blackberries and raspberries and huckleberries, they're out in full. I mean, I'm picking tons of them. So my bush is all in the backyard. I have to fight the birds for them. But, yeah, it's. I mean, they're out. But up in a lot of the northern areas, it's dry. Food isn't – they're having issues with some food. Now, water sources are still plentiful up north. The brand new research area that I've started getting into that was scouted this week, that if you watched, the pond was pretty – it was pretty flooded. It's in there. Like, there's a high level of water in there. So I expected not to find any water whatsoever, honestly. A lot of the creek beds are dry. I'm a trail runner. I was trail running up Thatcher Park. Did 60 miles the other day, and I could tell you all the creeks are basically dry. There's no water even running. Usually there's, you know, water running most of the time of the year. So be careful of the bears. The bears are starting to come into more people areas. Also, because there's so many people in the woods now, that especially non-hikers that don't follow the rules of leave no trace and leave their garbage all over the place, the bears are scavenging up all the food and garbage that they're leaving behind. Okay, so they are not so much scared of humans anymore. They just had to euthanize a bear that for the second time up in the Adirondacks, Lake Holden area, came back down and started ripping up tents and pushing people out of the woods. So once again, be very careful. Bear activity is high. Yeah, I mean, definitely, yo, Western New York, definitely go back to Moose River and let us know what you find. Like I say, it's a wild place. There's all sorts of stuff in there. Keep us posted on that. Let's go back. We have the orbs. We've got lots of orbs in the bayous down here. Yeah, and that's the thing with orbs, man. It's like when you're in the woods, and we Kenny and I normally don't even talk about this subject, really. When you're in the woods and see all these orbs and lights and plop up, I mean, it's, you can't deny what you're seeing. Now, is it swamp gas? Is it gas coming from rocks? Or are the rocks moving? It's creating electromagnetic fields. And then we are able to see the electromagnetic field happen. Is there quartz and things like that? So these are things that we need to, you know, I guess study further, but we all know what we're seeing. So because we know what we're seeing, we can't deny what we're seeing at the end of the day. So with that. Now, hit up our research area. What have we been up to? All right, communication. We've been really communicating a lot this year. 2020 is the year of communication, all right? We started making different types of glyphs and things like that on the ground with sticks and other things, and using an alphabet. As I explained in the Facebook Live video, that's two parts yesterday because my phone overheated outside because it was so damn hot outside, that we have, you know, we are getting responses back from the glyphs. Now, what glyphs are we using? We're using glyphs from the Chinese alphabet, okay? One that seems to be working for us is if we use the V. V that looks like, let's see, where's my camera here? There we go. A V that looks like that, an upside down V, that means man, okay? So in that alphabet, that's man. What we did find that happened is in our teepee structure area that we personally made, okay, to do an experiment with, one of the sticks was actually picked up, pulled out from the tree, dug from left to right in the ground and laid straight across the other two sticks. Now, if we go into the alphabet, and that was a possible squatch that did that, and we're going to say possible, but what's interesting is, Kenny can confirm this, is we are finding 13-inch tracks right in the middle of camp. Is that right?
Yeah.
So we have a 13-inch track right smack in the middle of camp and another 13-inch track about 50 yards to 100 yards outside of camp. All right, so we do have something large walking in that area and hanging out with us, not a human. So with that being said, if that was a deliberate A now, so it's making the A formation, what that stands for in the alphabet is big man. Now, that's super interesting. Like, that's super interesting because that would mean that they would know who we are, first off, knowing what we're doing. So we put the sign for man, and now they're saying big man, which would make logical sense because they are bigger than us, but it kind of freaks me out just a little bit. When I say just a little bit, thinking now that they must know that we're there, and what I mean by that is they know that we are there when we're there. Right now, Crystal asked, do we have any cameras in the area? Right now, we pulled all trail cameras out of the woods, so we have no trail cameras in the area right now. What we did at the research area one is we broke it back down. So, Western New York, and we'll get to that because I agree with you, is that once again, we break everything back down, leave no trace principles. So all the sticks that were up against the tree for the teepee have all been taken down and thrown back in the woods. All of our structures that we created have all been taken down. Why do I do that? First off, leave no trace. We leave the woods right back to where it was, so you don't even know that we're there. Second off, if humans come through this area and things like that, hunters or, you know, people like us that are bushwhacking, we don't want them to also interact and falsely interact with what we're doing. We do have cameras up in the area when we're working in them, so I can monitor who's there, what's there. They're more than animals. Like I always say on all the shows, and I firmly believe this and I back it up, I do not want to catch a picture of a Sasquatch. I don't. Because if we put it out to the public, Kenny, what's going to happen if we put it out to the public?
It's just going to get torn apart, and no one's going to believe it anyways. So.
Exactly. And there's no point. If we got a picture, honestly, if we got a picture of a Sasquatch, I would keep it between the team, first off, and second off, use it for our witnesses and clients that we work with, you know, on one-on-one. There's nothing to put out, and it's not that we're hiding anything. It's that it would be so scrutinized like every other piece of evidence you put out there. It takes the luster away from the picture. And I stand behind that statement. People say I'm full of bullshit, part of my language, but at the end of the day, I'm not, because I'm just telling you what it is.
No, you're definitely not when it comes to this. Hey, Gary, you're kind of, your face is kind of disappearing, kind of going off.
Am I good now? There we go.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
It's funny because it's so, there we go. It's split screen, so I only have like a little area now. I see it. We're still learning this. So with this, now, Western European foot ask, 13 inches, sounds like a young Squatch. Correct. What I personally believe this Squatch is a juvenile male. All right. I believe that we're dealing with a juvenile male. The area that we research in the Adirondacks, I thoroughly believe and truly believe it's a nursery. I believe that this is a nursery type area. We find young squatches up in there. We find young tracks up there. Today on Instagram, if you follow our Instagram, New York Bigfoot Society on Instagram, yay! I post a lot more like mountain stuff up on those on Instagram. All those nice outdoor pictures. But I did post up a Bigfoot track, all right, that I found in this area about 6 or 7 miles back in the woods in the middle of nowhere when I was bushwhacking. So you can see the baby foot print. It's about 4 to 5 inches. But what you tell me what's barefoot about 6-7 miles in the back of the woods, you tell me. And you can only use GPS really to find it and get back out. So once again, I believe that this is a nursery type area. We're dealing with a juvenile Squatch that's coming into its own. All right. So we don't still understand that when squat breeding pairs of Sasquatches, as they continue to breed, what happens to the males once they break away from the family? Okay? We still don't have that clear understanding. So does it become like a gorilla-type alpha situation where or a lion, where the male, the younger lions will start trying to dominate the alpha males for dominance? Do the juvenile males stay in the area? Do they just end up going off on their own? And maybe that's why we have all these clusters in some areas that they're all the same family, but, you know, it's a breeding population. So one goes off and starts its own family. So we have all these, you know, theories based on that. And if we go logically with it all, it would make sense that a juvenile would have to start coming into its own, which means learning the woods on its own, and it would become more alpha and territorial. I personally believe what we're dealing with is, you know, territorial type issues. Western Bigfoot says, according to the chart I have, he should be somewhere around 7 to 7.5 feet tall, 500 to 580 pounds. It could be possible. You know what I mean? It depends on how much he's eating right now and things like that. I mean, obviously, he would be taller than us. Maybe they may be more lankier than us at that point. It's hard to say. But, I mean, it would make logical sense if that's what we're dealing with a 13 to 14-inch track. But that's what we've been doing with the communication aspects of it. All right. I mean, it's been working for us. Research area number 2, which is our brand new spot. I got down there last week. It's a remote pond. And let me tell you, it's remote. Like I have to go down there with some saws and stuff and do some bushcrafting, whacking and sawing because you can't even get to the pond unless you're American Ninja Warrior, which I thoroughly enjoy. But when you're going down there with a lot of gear, and rucksacks and things like that, it's a pain right in the butt. And I can't see a Bigfoot doing it. So as of right now, where the spot that I'm in, I do not think it's squatchy on that side. Now, across on the other side of the pond, I do think it's squatchy, only because it's hardwood forest and it's a lot more open, all right? So they'll be able to move a lot easier than what I had to go through just to get to the one side of the pond. So we will be reporting from that from the next couple of weeks as I plan to get down there and start doing more research of communication. Now, I did leave a glyph down in that area, so and I left it right off a deer path, so it was the more open area. So we'll see if anything happens with that. The overall goal is I'm creating a triangle-type research area. I call it the Squatch Triangle. That way we have all corners. So we have all four corners of the triangle or research areas or camps, and then we have the whole middle of that triangle that should be the roaming, this where they should be roaming. They should be coming up through the middle of the triangle. All right? Why don't I do a square? Because I just think triangles are cooler. That's all. Like the Bermuda Triangle. We just call it the Squatch Triangle, you know?
Yeah.
That is so much cooler. We'll do a pentacle next year. Why not? But yeah, so anyway, that's what kind of what we've been doing with that. The, you know, take this research area, make the end points our main camps in the focal area, the whole middle. So right now we have 2 points of the triangle. I have to now calculate one more point, which would be a focus. Once again, areas for that we research and we stay near is water. So always stay near water because animals need water. Sasquatch would need water. Now, not saying that they need to drink water from the resource itself, but they may follow any kind of animal down there. And all the animals are there. It's easy pickings. I mean, we hear about it all the time when we hear about Sasquatches and cricks dipping down at the side of the bank of the creek, taking a bath, drinking, things like that. So we use bodies of water, and once again, it seems to be working. A lot of the foot tracks, a lot of the evidence that we're finding is near these water areas, especially now. In the summer, it's hot. I wouldn't expect them to be moving that much right now because it's hot. And, once again, animals lay low when it's hot out. And that's why, Chris, to answer your question before about the camera, that's why we're not in research area number one right now. With it being so hot and in the summertime, we kind of duck out of there, and it becomes kind of busy with hiker traffic and things like that. So we kind of get off the beaten path there and move somewhere else. So that's why we do that and take the cameras out of the woods. So that's what we've been up to.
I got a question. Our last research area, we couldn't get any signal on our phones or anything. Did you check in this one if there was a signal?
There is a signal.
So we
there
could actually
is.
Do some live videos from there.
Yeah, well, we can try. That's the key thing. We can try. I don't know how well the signal is. I don't know. When I go back, I'm going to have to pinpoint exactly where it is. Because I did get a signal, because I got text messages that magically came through. So that would tell me that somewhere in there is a signal. But I do not know if it's good enough to do a Facebook Live update or something like that. But what we can do is make videos. And then once we get service, the minute we get out of there, which is a good, about half hour before you get service, we can then start uploading them right away as fast as possible. So we try to get you updated on the fly, and it's hard because we don't get service a lot of times, and that's just the big problem of that kind of stuff. I personally enjoy it because then no one can bother me, so I'm good with that. But Crystal, let's see, she's
I agree.
What would exactly? She goes, what would you say the distance in miles between points? Now, the distance in miles right now, I can estimate at about 5 miles in between. So from research area one to research area two, it's about a 5 mile hike, okay? Within now to go straight across. Now where I put the other point though, that depends on what I find at this pond area, okay? So once I'm able to really scout this whole pond, and when I say pond, this is a large body of water, okay? So it's like a pond, it's a swamp, but it's a large swamp. So it's going to take me a hot second to get around it, especially bushwhacking and the really thick stuff. So right now where I put the third point may only be a mile from the pond in a different direction. What direction I'm going in, I still don't know. Which I say that, left or right, that's my choices. which means east and west, okay? So I'm either going east or west. That's basically, right now I'm north and south. The next issue is east and west, where I'm going to go with that. But I'm going where it logically would make sense for animal traffic. Once again, I keep very logical. Follow the animals, you'll find the Bigfoots. Follow the people, you find the Bigfoots, okay? So once again, that's my opinion on it, and that's what seems to be happening and working. After 10 years of research, this is of just Bigfoot in this area, this is what I'm finding. This seems to be the golden cardinal rule, okay? But you have to be way up in the woods. That's the main thing. You can't be looking for Bigfoot on the hiking trails. Too many people stay on the hiking trails because they're scared of the woods. If you're scared of the woods, and you probably should be very careful about doing Bigfoot to begin with, because you have to go off the beaten path, find yourself way up in the woods, not get nervous that you can find yourself back out of the woods, because when you're up there, it's very easy to get turned around and very easy to get lost. You can think you're heading back, and you're actually heading the totally opposite direction. I have been lost. I lived in Maine for a hot second, and I had 270 acres on a mountain. I lived in a log cabin home. I was lost in the woods knowing, and I'm knowledgeable of the woods. I got lost for 12 hours in the woods. 12 hours. I had nothing other than a coffee mug because I drank my morning coffee, went down there. I had a bush camp in the woods that I used to play around at. And then I decided to go try something, you know, new, because that's what I do, and got turned around on a hill. And I thought I was coming down the same way I came up, and I ended up going around the side of the hill. And next thing you know, I was totally backwards. 12 hours later, I ended up on the main turnpike. And then I come out the woods, and I'm like, oh, I'm on the main turnpike right now. Like, so once again, you gotta be careful, man. You gotta be very careful of the woods, even experienced people. You know, I always have everybody have gear with them so we know what we're doing at all points in time. So Western New York Bigfoot says, I agree. They always found me, not the other way around. Yeah, I mean, if we stumble upon one, that's rare in my opinion. But usually they come to us. They really do. We're their entertainment, it seems. That's why people have them in their backyards. They watch what's going on in the family houses and the barns and things like that. In same way. So it's kind of freaky when you're in the woods and, you know, you think, oh, like they're watching everything you're doing, but you can't see them. You can't see them, which then kind of, I understand why people say they're paranormal. You know, maybe that weird orb light has something to do with Bigfoot, you know? I mean, Kenny and I saw it. And Kenny is on the cusp with that kind of stuff, right? But Kenny flat out said he saw it.
Yeah, I don't do paranormal stuff. I
know.
I try to avoid anything ghost, anything like that. So,
yeah. So I mean, it's weird, and it was close to our camp, and that's all we know is that a weird orb light was very close to our camp. The minute we started playing the Native American music, when we were there for a couple hours, and it didn't happen until we played the Native American music, which then this magic little light bulb, like someone flicked on a light, turned on. And we're just kind of left with, all right, well, then you have what Kenny showed earlier, Rob Moorhead and the Quantum Bigfoot. So who knows? And the Loch Ness Monster and interdimensional time travel. Like, we're kind of in quartz. So there's just so much weirdness to all this stuff that does happen in the woods. So, all right, Kenny, I guess end it now. So we're done here.
Hey. I hope everybody was able to hear us and it was all nice and smooth. And I thank everybody who jumped on and tuned in to see it, you know, us try to do something new here. So we really appreciate that.
Yeah, we thank you, everyone. And like I say, we hope it was as smooth as it could go. This is brand new for us. So definitely leave comments for us if there was any problem with the video feed and things. We would like to know that. If not, we will do this again coming up in 2 weeks when we do another radio show. And we love answering your questions and having you guys interact with us. That's the main thing. That it's that interaction. That's how we will solve this mystery in one way or another, is working together, solve the mystery, and go from there. But Kenny, any last remarks before we get out of here?
Just be safe when you're going out. Know where you're going, and make sure people know where you're going. So that way, if something does happen, they can come out and find you. Other than that, enjoy the heat, enjoy the summer, and stay safe.
Yeah, and Crystal, no problem. That's what we're here for, to answer questions at all points in time. And Western New York Bigfoot, be safe out there, man, and we got to get together again soon and talk things over. But, friends, as always, please, if you go in the woods, be safe, as Kenny said. It's hot now. Overhydrate yourself in the woods. Bring extra water. If you bring your pets in the woods, I mean, bring extra water. Your pets, you know, they run a lot hotter than we do, okay? Fire temperatures are up, and it's very dangerous. They just had a dog had to get rescued the other day out of the high peaks. Just because we can handle it sometimes, our pets, they can't. So, I mean, if it's too hot, don't bring your dogs out in the woods. And as always, leave no trace principles. If you pack it in, pack it out. And for all the people that are out there trashing everything, we need to pick up after them. Be the ambassadors of the forest. Bring some gloves with you. Bring some extra bags. You know, we're always packing out garbage out of the woods, and it's our job to, you know, pick up the after people, which is it's ridiculous. But in the same sense, we just can't leave the garbage there. It needs to come out, so we need to do our job. All right, everybody, as always, keep it squatchy, and we'll see you out on the trail. Deuces!
Thank you for listening to the NYBS Radio Show. Tune in next time as we continue our search for Bigfoot right here in the great state of New York. Until next time, friends, keep it squatchy, and we'll see you out on the trail.